Welcome to Soul Play Campus. This is Uma Girish, grief guide, dream coach, and award-winning author. I'm going to be reading a couple of extracts from the book that I've written. My book is called Losing Amma, Finding Home, a memoir about love, loss, and life's detours. So I just want to start by saying that when you are grieving someone, when someone you love has passed away, the best way that you can honor their memory is by expressing yourself. And you can choose to express what you feel through any way that's comfortable for you. Some of us like to write. I love to write. I've always written, and I love to write when I'm sad, and I love to write when I'm happy or angry. When I put those words down on a page, I understand what I'm feeling better. And once I'm done writing, I feel like it's out of me. I've cleaned myself out on the page. For some of you, that may be painting, sculpting, doing something creative, working with paper or craft, with art, with clay, making jewelry maybe. So whatever that form of expression is, choose to honor it and engage in it. Pretend that you're making this for your loved one who has passed away. That's the best way we can honor their memory. Because when we express ourselves through the gifts that have been given to us, we feel better. We feel better about our emotions. It is a way for our emotions to escape and come out of our bodies and minds, and that helps us heal. So when my mother died, one of the things that I did was write the book. The book is called Losing Amma, Finding Home. And Amma, just so you know, is the word in my native language for mother or mom. So I'm going to read you a little extract from my book. And what you need to know is where this happens. So my mother passed away in India and I was in Chicago at the time. I got on a plane and flew back to India where I spent 2 weeks participating in her last rites. And then my daughter, Ruki, who was 15 at the time, she and I flew back home to Chicago. So this extract is right after we've come back. It's the morning after, and we're going grocery shopping. Late morning, Ruki and I drive to Dominic's. We usually shop at Meijer, but if I have to pay a few extra dollars to shop and drive less than a mile on treacherous, snowy roads, I'll do it. I walk into Dominic's thinking, I just lost my mother. What do I need apples for? A well-dressed lady is standing at the fruit bin. She picks up an apple, inspects it, tosses it back on the pile, then picks another. She repeats the process with clementines and pears. I watch her from a safe distance, hypnotized, utterly impressed by her efficiency. Then I take my place in front of the bin and stare at the fruit. They all look the same. Colors and shapes and textures blend and blur. I pick an apple. It feels heavy in my palm. I smell it. Nothing. I turn it around, then watch it sit in the middle of my palm before I chuck it back on the pile. I don't know what to do. I don't know how to do this. The simple act of buying fruit, which once took me all of 3 minutes, has become a chore of Sisyphean proportions. Ruki comes to my rescue. She says nothing, simply slides out the grocery list through my limp fingers and starts to crisscross the aisle in determined strides, grabbing bread and cereal, detergent and low-fat yogurt. I push the cart, follow her around. That I know how to do. On the drive home, the air is thick with silence. I'm the conversationalist in the family, When I stop talking, our apartment turns into a tomb. I'm usually chatty with Ruki, teasing, sharing stories in the safe, intimate way you can only with your daughter. Now I sense that Ruki is at odds. She doesn't quite know how to bridge the gap or what might be appropriate conversation given my mental state. I, on the other hand, have no energy and nothing to say. When we get home, I open the door of the freezer. Girish has stocked it with boxes and boxes of store-bought vegetarian meals. I've always cooked meals from scratch. I'm not used to eating pre-cooked food out of a box. But this one time, I'm truly grateful for the indulgence. I peel the foil off a couple of boxes, stick them in the microwave. Ruki has to eat, even if I left my appetite back in India. So this section tells you what I was feeling almost as soon as I got back home from India. I was back in Chicago. It was January of 2009 and freezing cold. I was still getting used to the weather here, and it was extremely lonely, especially at a time when I was suffering my mother's passing. So that's the extract, the first extract that I'd like to read for you. The second extract takes place when I drive to work. So at the time, I had a part-time job at a retirement community, a place where the elderly live. So every Monday morning, there would be a PowerPoint presentation that my supervisor did for the seniors who got together in a conference room. And so I've just parked my car and I'm walking up to the building. So this is the extract from that bit. Every Monday morning is the Connect 101 presentation, an hour-long PowerPoint on a topical subject. The spectrum ranges from Christmas traditions and Mardi Gras to the world's best travel destinations, and better brain health. The presentation is held in a large, well-lit room with chandeliers glittering overhead. Lori, my supervisor, is the presenter. Nervousness a flutter in my belly, I walk into the lecture room and straight into Lori's open arms. She holds me tight. When we pull apart, she looks me in the eye and asks, "How are you doing?" I look away, feeling the pressure in the back of my throat. Then I shrug, non-committal, unable to speak. "I'm so sorry," she says, as I fix my gaze on the patterns of the bright red carpet at my feet. Usually about 20 to 30 residents hobble in with their walkers or roll in their wheelchairs, a precious few unaided, before settling in to listen and watch. The residents are shuffling in. The ones that know me come up and give me a hug. News has spread. "So sorry," they mumble. Others cluster around them and ask, "What happened?" "She lost her mom," some say softly, for they are not words one shouts. But the loud "what?" from the hearing impaired prompt them to turn up the volume on my mother's death. "Who died?" others are still trying to hear. And decorum be damned when the know-alls now shout, "Her mother died." "Oh," say those who hear this time. Some are still trying to piece it together from their neighbors. I stand on the sidelines and watch the story of Amma's death become an improv show. I feel their pity pouring all over me. I don't want their pity. I want Amma. Soon, Lori is all business and hands me a sheaf of forms. I need to update the forms with resident information so we can use it as a reference for the residence photo directory we are compiling tomorrow. She has to repeat the instructions 3 times to me before it sinks in. I stand in the middle of the room, the forms limp in my hand, the seniors in the middle of their walker wars. I got here first. Move yours over to that side. I have no room. Everything fading, blurring, then coming into sharp focus. It's like my mind's zoom feature is going crazy. What am I doing here? Who are all these people? My mother just died. 4 life-changing words, the only words that are relevant above the din in the room. Any way you arrange them, the effect is the same. Heartbreak. Thankfully, in a while, the lights dim, the whispers in the room hush, and the big screen comes to life. I sink into a chair, grateful for the reprieve. 5 minutes later, the Chicagoland manager, Wendy, taps me on the shoulder and whispers, "Dave wants to see you." I tiptoe to the back of the room where Dave Walsh, the community's executive director, gathers me in a hug. "I'm so sorry for your loss," he whispers, and it takes every ounce of willpower to hold my tears back. There are some occasions in life when you're thankful for the low visibility in a dimly lit room. When the presentation is over, I record the seniors' personal information on the forms and hand the forms over to Lori. I'm not sure what to do next. Our program is just about taking shape in the community, and we don't have a well-choreographed work routine. The computers for the 7th-floor lab haven't arrived yet. Wendy, Lori, and I traipse back to the lone computer in the game room, our temporary headquarters. A short young man of average build strolls in. Wendy smiles and exchanges pleasantries before turning to us. "Meet Andy," she says. "He's joining our team as a computer lab assistant." Andy has friendly brown eyes and a gentle manner. We shake hands and I welcome him into the fold. Wendy suggests to Andy that he shadow me for a few days. Watch me working with the seniors and get familiar with the Connect 101 website. We set up a time to work together the following day. That evening, I'm sitting in the living room, my thoughts far away, when Rookie comes to me. "Ma," she starts, tentative. "I really don't like leaving you alone at home. I can drop out of the play. I mean, it's not like I'm in it or anything. I'm just the stud ass. Miss Smith will find someone else." Even with all that's going on, I can't help but smile at stud ass, the fremd theater crowd's lingo for student assistant. "Absolutely not. No way," I protest. "This is your big dream, Rook. I can't let you do that." "But I won't get home till 6 or 7 most evenings, and it'll be like even later as we get closer to tech week." "Yeah, but Dad will be back in Chicago by then." "What happens when he has to travel again?" She cocks her head to a side. She's been giving this some thought. "Rookie, I love how concerned you are about me, but you don't have to do this. I can't. Mama, you're going to be all by yourself from the time you get back from work until I get home. I don't know. I just feel..." She shrugs, uncomfortable about articulating her fear at what might befall her mother if left unwatched. She has a point. I usually get home between 12:30 and 1 in the afternoon. I'll have to rattle around for 5 or 6 hours until she gets home. I guess I could read, write, watch TV, exercise, or take a nap. But Rookie knows I haven't been able to do any of these things. I'm just bogged down by inertia, the lethargy of grief. It has seeped into my cells and tissue and bones, and I have no recipe for detox. But my grief is my job, not something my 15-year-old daughter has to feel responsible for. I pat the couch beside me and invite Ruki to sit down. I know you're worried about me. I also want you to know I won't be fine. Not for a while. But it'll be okay. I'll be okay. It's only been 3 weeks. I choke, still unable to finish most sentences without pausing to swallow. I love how you want to take care of me, how you want to quit the play to be with me, but I'm not going to let you do that. You have to trust that I'm going to be okay. I gather her in my arms and we cry together. You know, Rook, it's okay to cry. We love Party and we miss her. And I'm not going to hide every time I cry. I want you to know that it's okay to cry when you feel sad. When we cry together, we're here for each other. There are good times and bad, and we share it all. That's what being family means. So that was another extract from my memoir, Losing Amma, Finding Home. I just want to say a little about the piece I just read to you. I was sitting next to my 15-year-old daughter, Ruki, on the living room couch and telling her it was okay to cry. I know a lot of mothers try to hide their grief so they can protect their children. And sometimes children hide their grief because they feel they have to be strong for their moms or dads who are feeling the loss and who are sad. It doesn't have to be that way. Both children and adults can come together in the experience of sadness. You can hold each other and cry together. That's what Ruki and I did. And when we held each other and cried together, we shared the experience of sadness. We were family and we were crying together. So it's important to know that it's not just the good times that we share as family. It's also the bad times. It's the times when we are sad, when we feel lonely, when we miss someone we love. It's okay to tell your mom that or tell your dad that. And for moms and dads, it's okay to tell your kids that you're feeling sad, that you're not going to be okay for a while, and that it's okay to show emotion, to express emotion, and to come together and bond as a family even when you're feeling sad. So that's my message for you. I hope you enjoyed my extracts from my book. And if you liked what you heard, you can go to my website and buy your own personal copy. I will ship it to you, a personally autographed book that will arrive in your mail. And together we can share my story. So that's it for me, Soul Play Campers. I hope you're enjoying all the wonderful tidbits of information that are coming your way, all the adventures which are part of this camping experience. I wish you lots of love and blessings. Take care. I'll talk to you soon. Bye for now.